What'll it be, stranger?
You're Judas!
I've become free. I've been released, and you can't stand it. You'll do anything to bring me down.
You're listening to the Hollywood Saloon.
Saloon Shots, Round 11.
So I read on one of the movie sites that they're going to remake another movie, The Fly. Another remake. It's already been remade.
You talked about this in another show. This was brought up in a previous show.
Sure, sure.
Because we were both like shocked. It's like already The Fly?
Yeah. And we're going to remake The Fly, obviously. But here's the real catch. Now there's this talk that, well, if we're going to remake The Fly, why don't we get the guy who did it good the first time? Let's just bring in Cronenberg back, David Cronenberg, and let him remake it again. Now that brings some...
That deserves pause.
It does. Well, because it's like on one end, I'm really confounded. And I'm like, well, then why are we doing this? It's like what exactly are you hoping to accomplish here? But then on the other hand...
That's the easiest one to get over with because that's our culture today.
Right.
And this is the thing I think filmmakers everywhere are starting to ask themselves. Do I want to work or sit this out? Because
right.
That's what it really is coming down to. Hollywood is deciding. They're not asking what films you want to make. They're telling you what films they have available to make.
Right.
And directors have a choice, and they can either choose to do these either genre, superhero, action, you know, whatever, generic movies, or these remakes and reboots. And, you know, that's the new, you know, soup of the day in Hollywood. And, you know, Cronenberg had a quote years ago. He said, I've been trying to sell out for years. It's just nobody's listening or nobody's taking notice, you know. But that's the thing about Cronenberg. He's too smart of a guy. You even give him a graphic novel material like A History of Violence, and he's still going to find ways to creep some layers into it. The same way that he creeps layers into something, even a genre piece like Scanners or even Videodrome, even a lot more so in that. But, you know, and also the success I think he had with Eastern Promises. I mean, I think Cronenberg is an open filmmaker. I remember reading they offered him Alien 4, well, Alien Resurrection.
Interesting.
After Danny Boyle left the project.
Hmm.
This is pre, you know, Jean Genet. But this interesting thing is Cronenberg was interested in doing it, but they wouldn't give him script control.
Right.
They wouldn't give him creative control. It was like, no, this is our script. This is our project. If you want to come in and do this, maybe we're interested or not. But it didn't happen.
Well, see, that's the scab mentality. Why do you even ask David Cronenberg to be involved at that point? It's like you hire someone with a very specific vision to bring that very specific vision, not to say, well, we're going to control you and puppeteer you the whole way through this. No, if you hire David Cronenberg, you say, go and do what you do so well. And
formula worked out to his involvement in The First Fly, because it was Charles Pogue who had written the first draft, and Cronenberg came on board, and he only liked aspects of it. He wanted to come in with some of his own ideas, and he did, you know, share screenplay credit, but, I mean, he really did bring a lot of his own ideas and made it his own film in a way. And you and I can still remember what it was like pre-Fly.
Right.
When you only had the Vincent Price film as a reference. And this is one of those times where the remake overtook the original in terms of public consciousness now, because it is Jeff Goldblum in many ways, and the vomiting and the gross outness, and the fact that the film didn't pull punches. It went full throttle. And that was the great thing about Cronenberg when, you know, when he does his best work and he's in the zone. There's a reality and a fantastical that he's able to maintain in his films, and sometimes can show you some of the most bizarre imagery, but sometimes it's quite beautiful in a strange way. And that's what I've always loved about his work. So I know this is the long form of the first aspect of your question. For a guy like Cronenberg, this is interesting because he was just involved in the Fly opera with Howard Shore.
Mm-hmm.
Where they, you know, restaged it and did a lot of things. So obviously The Fly has been on his mind and a lot of things about it, and the composer Howard Shore. So from Cronenberg's perspective, It's going to happen, the remake, just like all these Platinum Dunes remakes and everything else. Right? It's going to happen.
Sure.
He's maybe thinking, wow, what if I took another crack at it? What would I do differently if I could? And maybe that's a segue into another thing as directors who do, you know, do a remake of their own work, which is a little fascinating subculture into itself.
Oh, I think it's a totally fascinating idea. And I think it's flawed, and I think it's interesting at the same time. I don't really know how to wrap my arms around it, because my initial gut reaction is to say, bullshit. I mean, what's wrong with the first film? There's nothing wrong with The Fly. But then again, that's still part A of the two-part question, okay? Because like you said, it's going to happen. So what do you do? Well, if you want to do it, that's available to you if all parties involved are there. Now, I would hope that if he does indeed do this, and you know, it's not 100% for sure at this point. We know that probably it will be remade, as most of these horror films have been. But you know, just him coming in and being involved in it again opens so many questions. And I mean, what would be that path? As far as, well, let's see, it's the same basic idea. So is it just all about having new tech? You know what I mean? Is it telling Stark?
I don't know. Not with Cronenberg, though. I don't think it's that simple with a guy like that. I'm wondering, will he take the same leap from the first original to his remake, from his remake to this new one? I mean, scientifically, a lot of things have changed from when he made the first one.
Right.
And he projected a lot of things that are certainly, you know, in the works and in the fields of science today. But I don't know. I would want him to maybe even make it futuristic in some ways. I mean, it should be very different from the last one, but still incorporating that basic theme of genetics. Now, there's a lot of different ways you can go. I thought his teleportation was a great additional idea.
Now, see, hang on. That's the part of the story that was so fascinating to me, was that it was really a hardcore science fiction film talking about, you know, the man who created the teleporter, you know, for Star Trek eventually. I mean, this could be a Star Trek prequel almost, let's say. That this
well,
is
for
how
half the film, Mr. Starlog Boy, yeah, I remember your letter in that issue of Starlog complaining about the second half of The Fly. Don't think I don't know got your book checked.
Yeah, you did. I did. I got, how many years ago was that? I wrote a letter into Starlog saying, I love this
you,
movie,
like,
but
I love this movie, but
well, because it was a hardcore science fiction movie, and then it takes a turn and become a horror movie. And that's fine, because they told us ahead of time where we were going, and I just got so trapped in the idea. Because to me, there's a whole film in the story of teleportation. And again, it's like, if we're going to make this movie again, oh, I guess, you know, we're going to dabble in that a little bit, and then do the horror movie again. And I'm almost like, can we just kill the whole horror movie aspect and just do the story of teleportation?
Brundle's such a good character anyway. You almost, you know, don't want the Fly aspect. You could do a whole movie on him. And then especially what Jeff Goldblum brings to the role.
Right.
Which, now here's the wildest thought of all. And if this happened, it would be the coolest and boldest thing since Van Zandt did Psycho shot for shot remake. What if Cronenberg brought back Goldblum?
Never in a million years would that happen. That would be the boldest thing, to just say, okay, we're going to just it's like a stage play. Okay, second day of the stage show, we're just redoing it again.
We did it 20 years ago. Let's put on a new version of it. You know, we can do it maybe better, or we'll do it differently or something.
But, you know, the hotheads in Hollywood who are you know, egging all this remake bullshit on.
Gerald Butler. Right.
You know. Elf.
No, how about Vigo, though? Maybe Vigo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, and what they're going to do is they're going to egg on young. We got to go young. Because remember, they're going to want to make sequels, right? They're not just going to try to hang on to this for one film. Because you got to remember, that's what, you know, there's no way in hell when Cronenberg made his film that he ever envisioned a Fly 2. Now, of course, we know that occurred. But when he was making his remake, he didn't say, well, what if it's Son of Brundle Fly? And, you know, it's – no. I have a hard time thinking that the studio would want him to bring his film to it. See, I still have a hard time buying into this. I'm interested and fascinated in the concept.
Oh, sure. It's fun to talk about, for sure.
Sure, but at the same time,
he wouldn't be the first director to do something like this.
Oh, no. I mean, there's times through history. I mean, you know, you sent me a list today. I mean, you know, even Michael Mann himself.
Michael Mann himself.
You know, when
maybe
he did,
Heat is a better film because he had already made it once and not that great the first time and was able to make it better the second time.
Now tell me the films you're talking about.
That would be L.A. Takedown. It was a TV version of Heat. Now, Michael Mann had the screenplay of Heat written as early back as 1979, 1980. But after he did Thief in 81, he has no interest in doing another crime movie. So he set it in a drawer. And he did The Keep and then got involved in Miami Vice and other things. Well, while he was in the midst of Miami Vice and Crime Story, he took L.A. Takedown, sort of hijacked the screenplay, tailored it down to a 90-minute and made one of those movies on NBC that if the movie takes off, they turn it into a series, perspective series kind of thing. So that was the movie of the week, L.A. Takedown, you know, written and directed by Michael Mann. It was obviously done on a quick budget. I think the whole thing was done in 14 days. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really fast, lean and mean. But, you know, he was able to take certain elements of the Hannah relationship with the Macaulay relationship of the characters. And, you know, you still get the famous one-on-one scene in the diner. I mean, really, it's a short version of Heat. It's a 90-minute version. I mean, it crosses many of the same beats. The ending's a little different. But, you know, it was a good warm-up act, I think, for Mann. And it's also a good exercise in what you can do when you get, you know, class actors doing some of the exact same dialogue.
It's like you understand when someone says, hey, you know that TV movie you made a few years ago? Yeah, let's do it for real this time. Let's get some real actors. Let's make it a film. Let's get some real cash involved here. You know, mm-hmm. You just do whatever you want. Do you want to make a bigger version of your student film? Kind of is that's really what we're talking about here? I mean, we've seen this happen many times before where someone has made a short film and then they turn it into a long film. I mean, how many times have we seen a student film remade into a feature-length film? I mean, many, many times. And so really that's – when I look at what he did with L.A. Takedown and Heat, I kind of see some reasoning there. Now, another one on your list you said was George Slutzer?
Yeah, Slutzer. Yeah, it was an interesting case. He did The Vanishing. I don't know if you ever saw
– Yeah, I saw the American version.
The American version, yeah. You know,
right.
I saw the original version before I saw the American version. And it was one of the rare cases where, you know, the same director comes to America and they want to remake the same film. Now – there's been a couple of directors that have done this and remade their own work, you know, that they originally did to try and, I guess, you know, go to Hollywood. It's the dream of some filmmakers, right? Go to Hollywood. They're going to make a big studio movie. They're going to remake your movie, except you get to direct it. So
again, there's another piece that makes sense because, all right, we know many times when they have a foreign film that does really well or is well-respected, people say, well, we need to make it an English language version with, you know, American
with movie stars.
With movie stars, right? So, again, I can kind of see from this point to that point.
But then they watered it down, though. That's the problem, though, is they didn't do the original. They didn't have the balls to do the original film and the original ending. It's too dark. American audiences can't handle that, but that was the power of the film.
Right.
Was that ending. That was the film. And anyone that experienced the original film was probably spooked by the time it was over because films normally don't do that.
Right.
And that was its power. But they don't do that in American movies. Everything has to work out. And that was why The Vanishing, I thought, you know, American remake sort of failed. But, you know, I think, you know, the concept was that Michael Haneke just recently did Funny Games in English, you know, with an American cast. And in a way, you know, we've talked about this in the past where a play might be staged and then, you know, come somewhere else with a different cast and they stage it again, you know, but the same director is directing it.
Sure.
You know, it's a different way of looking at it, of course. But, you know, like we said at the top of the show, it's just I think right now you either give up or you decide to play in the system. And this is what the system has to offer.
Now, that's what makes this particular movie we're talking about, The Fly remake, okay? a very different beast. I mean, because we're comparing it to movies that are, that have been remade. Like I said, you know, we've seen many, many movies that were student films remade. We've seen foreign language films remade again and again and again. But very rarely do we see a film that was a big budget remake getting remade by the same person. So I think this, if this happens, this will be a very unique situation that we haven't quite seen before. And how he handles that will be very interesting. I think it's too good to be true, because I think that the sensibility of the studios is to get, you know, they always want to go young, you know, young with actors, young with directors. You know, maybe Cronenberg's a little too old school for them. They want to get someone who's got a lot of flash and some music video director, they think, or something, to pump this out, and it can be a, you know, a 1 or 2 weeker
thing. It is 20th Century Fox. Maybe they need Gavin Hood.
Oh, God. Scab. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing is just that announcement alone earns it cachet with a certain subculture. There's an interest in there. And I think I'm going to join the camp as I'm not going to be negative about this. I'm not going to be saying, oh, well, Cronenberg needs to be doing this, that, and the other. You know, that's just wishful thinking. We don't know what other projects he has in the pipeline. We don't know what he's been trying to get off the ground or what he hasn't been able to. But if this is a go movie and it's going to happen anyway, and he can come into it and he has an idea, if there's a creative impulse, like something maybe when he was working on the opera, I'm sure his mind had to be, well, tingling of all kinds of other aspects that he didn't do the first time around.
Sure.
When you're that involved in the creative process of a project like he has been, he's been thinking about The Fly for a long time. So maybe there is something. That's where I'm coming from, is I think there's probably, if this is true, and I'm going on, you know, that sort of thread, if it is true, I bet there is something tingling in him that would like to try and get out in this film that he maybe didn't do the last time around. And that would be exciting to see.
Let's just take it off this example. Let's just say, you know how they recently announced that RoboCop and Aronofsky's doing the new RoboCop. What if they would have said, okay, Verhoeven, remake RoboCop?
I would say I would love it, because the Verhoeven after Starship Troopers would make an epic RoboCop. There would be more than just one or two. It's like, okay, if Verhoeven's trying to get this original project off in Hollywood and nobody wants to touch it, he can either not work for a year or go make sure a good RoboCop remake gets made, because in a way he's almost protecting his own brand, because he's associated with RoboCop brand. The sequel soiled it bad enough.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a remake's going to come along. It's an interesting thing. It's a different – it's a new way of thinking, of course, because it's becoming so mainstream with the remakes happening so much faster now in this culture. But – I would ask Verhoeven first. I remember I read that about Michael Mann when they went to – when Dino De Laurentiis went to remake Red Dragon. He had to ask Mann first. Mann had first refusal for any sequel or remake for that property. And, you know, of course, he passed on it. Not his cinematographer, though. Ratner roped in Dante Spinotti, so that's a guy who was on both projects. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, it would have been very interesting if Mann would have – chosen to do it, but again, he had already done it. He had nothing left to do with the material, I feel like.
They would have said, well, just take your movie that was really kick-ass before, and let's rope it around.
And just do it again with Anthony Hopkins, please, Edward Norton. And
you're going to have to – yeah, but see, what you would have to do is you would have to pump up that Hopkins role, because Hannibal Lecter in Manhunter is such a small piece of the pie. Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Essential.
Yeah, but –
and iconic because of its short – and brevity, I think, in that way. But see, Manhunter is not The Fly. The Fly is a concept.
Right.
Okay, I'll throw this out to you right now. The Fly, 2066. You could do it. I mean, you could still set it in any time period and come up with something that might be interesting of the day. You know, that same kind of playing around with science.
Well, all I can sit there and do is think of, Jason in space, you know, running around in space.
Oh, right.
Whatever the hell that was. Totally. Or, well, all right, think about it. Right, let's just take what you're saying. Okay, so he has to figure out a way to teleport an army. And so he teleports an army, and a fly gets in the teleporter or whatever, right? And so they all come out fucking fly guys.
Oh, God. Yeah. See, that's what I wonder, if even the teleporter idea will survive. I wonder if it'll move beyond that.
Interesting.
looking for a cure to something or playing around with science to achieve something and then having this all happen. I don't know. I think that's what Cronenberg brought in. He brought in the teleportation, but that was an interesting scientific idea, which was perfect in the 80s.
Let's remember, all they're really buying is a title, right? They're buying a brand to get you to walk in is really
what it is.
They're not really buying the exact story or the screenplay.
This is Hills Have Eyes. This is Nightmare on Elm Street. This is the same Platinum Dunes branding, horror, get it in the theaters quick mentality. Of course it is.
Did you see the Freddy Krueger trailer, the new Nightmare on Elm Street trailer?
No.
Oh, God. Okay, you know the shot in the bathtub where the hand comes up in the bath when the girl's sitting in the bathtub?
I know it very well.
They did it. It's exactly in the trailer. Exactly. And I'm like, I just don't get it. I'm like, the exact shot has been done. How is it new and different and scary now that you already know what's going to happen? It's just
do
like,
they have to do a bathtub again? That's the whole thing. Reimagining is reimagining. That's not reimagining.
Well,
that's just ripoff.
Well, maybe the rest of the movie's reimagining, but I mean, you know, the shirt color was the same and all that. It just, you know, whatever.
See, to me, The Fly is a reimagining. That's taking a concept and an idea. You watch them both. Watch the Vincent Price version. It's not a bad movie. It's, of course, you're going to say dated and of its time, but there's some good things in it. It's a reimagining completely, the same way The Thing is a reimagining on that original film, Carpenter's Thing.
Well, and you know what? Let's just say this. The word remake is a very dainty word at this point because we like to throw around the word remake, but it's not really a remake. It's, like you said, a reimagining. It's just we're going to buy this title and this basic concept. And you do whatever you want to do with that and make it palpable for people to you know, so that it's a movie you know, for 82
but
minutes.
The Platinum Dunes aren't doing that. I mean, their Friday the 13th was just a checklist from the first three movies of just kills you'd seen before, updated, same old thing. It's just – it's tired. It's not doing, you know, that, what you're talking about, of really coming in and saying, hey. You know, to me, it's even lamer than what Van Zandt did with Psycho in some ways because it's just so blah and forgettable.
Someone should really just, as a test, do a new poster, a new logo for a movie and just re-release it, you know?
You and I used to joke about this when we walked the aisles of Hastings. We would take old movies and we would put them in the new release section and just see if it got rented. Just if it was in that section,
right.
New release, people would rent it. But if the same movie was not in the new release section, they wouldn't go near it. And that was a funny – because it was true.
Yeah.
You put that movie in there and it was gone. You know, someone didn't even know any different.
It's like, hey, let's put Green Ice in the new release section and see what happens. And we would come back and be like, someone rated Green Eyes.
Because you used to hate that. You'd walk in there and it'd be like new release section empty. The rest of the store just packed with movies.
Yeah.
Always. Just the new releases only.
Oh, it's so funny. I know. And yeah, I just
– it's sink or swim. You got to get out of the game or
right.
You choose to play in the game. And that's – it's got to be the attitude you take. I'm not saying I like it, but come on.
No.
This is a corporation. They're submitting their numbers to Goldman Sachs and they're, you know, sitting there going, okay, should we make this movie? No, the numbers don't think we should do it. Yes, the numbers think we should do this one. And of course the numbers are going to favor branding titles.
Of course.
Every single time.
Well, and that's the deal is that – if you and I are going to keep talking about this, as we can't help but do, I think it's to the point where we have to get used to it too. I've got to come to grips with that you're right. This is the reality of Hollywood today. This is not what we ever saw film coming to, but really that's what it is. And this is where we're going to be for a few years. And, you know, they keep going and making these movies more popular and more popular. And, you know, if you can shoot a movie for $10 million and get 60 off of it, who loses? Nobody loses. Well, we the consumer lose because you get, you know, a lot of people, you know, I can't tell you the amount of people on Facebook that were like, going to see that Halloween 2 tonight. And I'm like, I don't get it. It's like you're just walking right into their trap. You know, same with Friday the 13th and all of them, walking right into their trap that they've set for you. And it's like, really, honestly, like I was saying, what would happen if you just rebranded an old movie?
Well, you know what, though? The audience is doing this exact same thing as the filmmakers. The audience are deciding either I go to the movies or I don't. I can't do anything about the quality of the movies they make. People just, they want to go to the movies, so they go.
Right, right.
And it just happens to be that's the crap they see. But see, the people have a choice. If they got picky, they wouldn't go to the movies at all. They would have to go do something else. But people want to go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your dilemma. And that's created the culture that we have now of complacency, because they want to go see something, anything. And, you know, maybe Halloween 2 will be good. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like we thought about Terminator and Salvation. Maybe. Maybe.
Exactly. You're standing in line. You're watching the trailer on your iTouch. And you're going, this looks kick ass.
Yeah.
Let's go see it. All in line. You know, you don't know anything else about the movie.
Yeah.
You didn't even see Terminator 1 through 3, you know? It's this new movie with Christian Bale. Yeah, we like Dark Knight. Let's go see this Terminator thing. Let's find out what it's all about.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that I'm ever going to get my arms around it, because I'm just completely satisfied with what Cronenberg did before. And I just don't see, you know, unless it's a completely different
film. Have you
film.
Warmed up to the movie over the years? I mean, once you got over that initial...
Well, the basic idea of it is very cool. I mean, it's gross. It's just a gross-out movie. I mean, it's, you know, I think I've ever gotten used to that kind of gore, you know, and it's just, it doesn't really excite me.
They don't do that in the same way anymore, but that was sort of a, you know, actually, after The Thing, that was the next evolutionary of that kind of prosthetic effects and whatnot. I mean, Chris Wallace, what, he won an Oscar for it, right?
Sure.
He even got to direct The Fly 2. The effects were so good in The Fly.
Well, I mean, it's amazing. But when you watch someone pull their fingernails off, I mean, you know, you get the heebie-jeebies. And, you know, there was long time when that was Cronenberg's shtick. I mean, in every movie that he made in the beginning of his career.
He was the guy that blew up a head first.
Right.
I mean, that was a huge effect in Scanners. I mean, that's iconic to me when that happened. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I can remember when I saw The Fly, it opened the same weekend as Manhunter, if you want to tie it back in to Michael Mann.
Uh-huh.
The exact same weekend. I remember it well. August 16, 1986.
Uh-huh.
Saw Manhunter first, of course, and then went back later that night and saw the Fly.
How funny.
But the whole audience, the way they reacted to it, was a fantastic audience experience. The responses that people had towards it was intense, because they hadn't really experienced something. And that's what they remembered about that movie, is it went further than most films like that had to, but it left its impact. It scarred you in some ways, like some of the best films do. But that's what some of the best filmmakers do. And, you know, that's why we love Cronenberg. And that's why I will certainly be interested in whatever he chooses to do next. I just rewatched X Extends, and that's a really underrated film of his. Any video game fan out there should love that movie and the concepts that it has. The guy's a smart, smart guy. I would just love to see him tackle The Fly again with a whole new radical idea like he had the first time around, if that's what this case is.
Cronenberg has stepped past the gore at this point. I mean, he's still obviously welcome to use whatever bag of tricks he started with.
You noticed in History of Violence, though, he brought it out when Vigo hit that guy on the lawn. I was like, man, that guy's face is hanging off.
And that's okay, you know, but that's a little more realistic. I mean, but it's not really – I wouldn't consider History of Violence a horror film. I mean, it's just a thriller kind of. And, but when you look at where he's gone – and then he did Eastern Promises. I mean, that's a full-on dramatic film that at any time could win a Best Picture type of an award. I mean, you know, it's like – and he directed that performance. I mean, you know, that he came out of that. He can do anything after Eastern Promises. I mean, the world's open to the man. He can go anywhere, I think, just with his pure talent.
I think he's shown the chops of all these younger guys, even with these latest two films. I don't think these music video directors can even come up to the level of that work.
No, no way. If he would have stayed in that genre, and he would still be the gross-out Cronenberg who we knew before, who we still respected, you know, kind of in the way that we respect George Romero, or even in some circles, John Carpenter in a little bit of a way. But it's like it's different because he stepped above that, yet he still has that, and people still respect him for that. But at the same time, he stepped above that and did something like Eastern Promises. So, you know, he could make anything, and I would be interested to see it. And if he did this new fly, of course. Absolutely. Just to see the damn experiment and what would happen with it.
You know, I keep reading about this new Scanners remake, 3D, next year.
Yeah.
I almost want to make Cronenberg remake that one, too, just so no one else can, you know? It's like, we're going to give you a bigger budget. We're going to let you play in this whole new 3D toys, you know? Do Scanners 2010. Do the updated version, because I bet you, not that he would necessarily want to revisit it, but if he did, he would have a lot of new ideas based on, you know, from when he originally did the first one back in 80.
Oh, sure.
But they're going to happen. That's the problem. Scanners is going to happen. And, you know, I don't want Scanners to be just a nothing movie remake.
Right.
Because I do think Scanners is a good property. It's a really great high concept.
That would be more appropriate for him to remake because now it's saying, okay, you made it before on a shoestring budget.
I do think he could make a better movie.
He
could
sure.
get some better actors than he had in that one. And he could certainly do more with the size because his idea was bigger than what he had to work with, obviously, when he made the first one. And, you know, there's still some innovative makeup effects and so mm-hmm. forth in there. And I always loved the idea behind it because it wasn't neat in Scanners. It was dangerous when they used their abilities. It actually harmed them in some way. So there was always consequences. Sure. It was fascinating.
No, it's a great idea.
Science.
And like I said, in this experiment that we're playing right now, I would like to see him make that. That would make more sense than going back and remaking right. a big budget film that just, you know, is just, you know, a little more recent.
But imagine you're like a father and these are your babies and it's like, okay, if I don't remake these movies, I can't protect my children. You know, somebody else is going to take my children away and remake them, you know. I don't know. I wonder if you and I were a filmmaker that invented a property like Scanners,
right.
would we feel protective over it 20 years later?
Well, look at John Carpenter as an example, and the answer is no.
No, he's not. You know, he's a tired, you know, older man that just has earned some rest, but it's time to get back and make some films, Mr. Carpenter.
It's interesting with if you want to say a director who did remake a movie of his own, kind of,
oh, no. yeah,
you got to kind of think he did, you know.
He did.
I mean, and you
with
you,
some new ideas, right? Interjected.
Escape from New York, Escape from L.A.
Map to the Stars, Eddie.
Same freaking movie. Yeah. I love experiments. I love breaking rules. I don't necessarily like it when it's injected into this Hollywood jerk-off remake fest. Because I think the original Fly is just fine for what it is.
What if he roped 20th Century Fox and said, yes, I want to do the remake, but, you know, naturally I get creative control and everything. And they go, yes, yes, yes. And he makes the opera. He literally pulls a fast yeah. one on Fox. And makes an opera, and they got to release it. It's completely not what they wanted.
Yeah, no, then they call Rennie Harlan to make the other version. wait.
Quick, Rennie, can you get this out in 6 weeks?
Call Rennie Harlan. We know he can redo a movie fast. Oh, man. Anyways, interesting experiment. We wish David Cronenberg the best. And, you know, I'll always love David Cronenberg for a very silly reason. I've always enjoyed and respected his films, but he'll always be the guy in Alias who offered Sidney Faken. Remember Faken?
Oh, yeah.
Faken?
I love that about Cronenberg. He's always been willing, you know, he said that, you know, it's always helped him as a director to go be an actor.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and Landis used to do that all the time, was cast directors in his movies.
Yeah.
And a lot of the directors always said it was a good experience just to get some experience in front of the camera and so forth. And, you know, Landis had done that with Cronenberg, of course, and many others. But, yeah, you know, him showing up in movies, you know, over the years has been great because he's a good actor, too.
Oh, yeah.
He's even in the Jason X movie. But still, I watched it because he was in it. And yeah. I wanted to see what he would do, you know.
Exactly.
And I don't look down on Cronenberg going, oh, gee, you acted in Jason X. I bet it was a fun experience for him. You know, the perspective is completely different. It almost is like the finished project is irrelevant, but I'm sure the experience was a lot of fun.
Sure.
Which is the attitude everybody that has that works in Hollywood anyway. I mean, look, if you work on makeup on a movie, when a movie comes out and you know it's not very good, when you ask your friends, what did you think about it? What you're really saying is, what did you think of the makeup in it?
Yeah.
Was the makeup good in it? You know, what do you think? How did I do? You know?
Oh, man. But anyway, so there we go. Experiment moving forward. Let's see what ends up of this thing. And, you know, it could be that this is all bullshit and someone else will be involved. But
is Ratner getting the call?
Yeah. Wouldn't shock me. Ugh.
It's so weird and strange. I would love it just to shake things up.
Sure.
That's worth it enough. And if it's a failed experiment, you know what? It was probably going to fail anyway with the lame remake. So let's just balls to the wind. Let's just see what happens.
Well, and you know what? It's not like they wouldn't remake it again. You know, then there's no rules anymore. If it fails the first time, give it a few years. They'll remake it again. You know, just with a different scientist and the same exact thing happens. They'll just call it, you know, Fly Unbound or something. Whatever.
How about just Flies?
Yeah. Flies. Great.
You're listening to the Hollywood Saloon.